And today we will hear a talk on steps 8 and 9 from Geraldine G. from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Come on, please help me give her a warm welcome and come on in, Geraldine. It's all yours.
Hi, everybody. I am an alcoholic. My name is Geraldine, and because I am an alcoholic, that is what qualifies me to stand here before you today and pass the message. And steps 8 and 9, you know, who doesn't get a little bit nervous when they see that? Who doesn't get a little bit nervous when they see everything when we first come in? But the important thing to remember is the steps are the outline of the program, the cliff notes of the program. The program itself is everything that is fully contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the first 164 pages. The program's in the first 103 pages. And what we need to have is the spiritual awakening combined with our book knowledge and our experience. Because if I'm just here to bring you book knowledge, then you're not going to get anything out of it. Anybody can transmit knowledge from a book, but we are here to transmit an experience when we speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and my experience doesn't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. It speaks for myself and my own journey. So the first thing that I would like to say about these steps is it's so important to just know this. It's so important to know where the steps begin and end in the book. Steps 8 and 9 run from page 76, the paragraph that says, now we need action and more action. And they finish up on page 84. So that is just very important to know. 84. So that's where Yeah, 84. This where with that this thought brings us to step 10. And that is where they begin and where they end. So I just think it's very important to know when you're looking at the steps exactly what part of our big book you're focusing on. And remember, the 12 and 12 is wonderful. It has great, great essays, but it does not have precise instructions. So the first thing that I want to say about these steps is that is there is a definite, clear distinction between steps 8 and 9. So I'm going to try to cover both of those steps today. I'm not going to meld them together, because if they were meant to be melded together, then they would both be step 8. And we would have a step 9, a step 10, a step 11, and we would end there. But they are two separate steps. So, and a lot of times when I hear somebody speak on step 8, it automatically turns into a step 9 meeting. And then that kind of cheats the organic part of step 8. Because with step 8 is where the synchronicity in AA begins to happen. So, why are they always so closely connected, especially when people speak? Because the ideas, right? The reasons that we do these steps are so closely connected. And what is the reason that we do them? Because they have the same objective. And that objective is our need to rectify the harms we have done during our drinking that we may have imposed upon others and our proven way of life with corrective measures to do the restitution, which is such a huge, huge part of our program. We're spiritual invalids when we come in here, and we don't get recovery just by being a member. See tradition 3 about that. We have to arrive at a state of mind where we can concede and get that willingness from our higher power in order to accept our destruction and to get rid of it, to try to get rid of it as much as we can. Now, why do we do that? Well, this is about the personal relationships part of our fourth step. That's why when we look for our eighth step, we look on our fourth step. However, there may be some people that are not on your eighth step, and on your fourth step list, rather, that you have absolutely no any feelings towards. You know, you don't have a resentment towards them. You're not angry at them, but they may be on your eighth step list. So it's very careful to be. And that was my personal experience. I have two daughters. I did have a resentment with my older daughter. How dare she be angry at me for the things that I did? But I had no resentment against my younger child. She had been nothing but a caring, loving, kind, compassionate daughter who stood by me in my journey and came with me on my journey through Alcoholics Anonymous. But I owed that child an immense. So we do this because of the personal relationships part in our fourth step. We want the best possible personal relationships with every person we encounter. The best. Okay. And how do I do it? And I also have to do this. I have to be very careful about this part. You know, 4 through 9 prepares me for my step, my 10th step, right? I have to be willing to make those amends as I go along throughout my day. And that is the full transformation from selfishness and self-centeredness to self-awareness that I get in step 10. And in step 10, so important. I have to prepare so well for this step because in step 10, I get my freedom, my total and complete freedom. If you hear people talk about how they are unable to be in the same room with alcohol, if you hear someone mention the trifecta, which is ridiculous, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's, and they don't know how they're going to get through the holidays, one thing you can know about that is that they have not had the 10 step promises. And that's okay if they're sitting in this room for a month. Then you do whatever you can to help them. But if they're sitting in this room for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and they still don't have that spiritual freedom of step 10, it's either very poor sponsorship or a complete unwillingness to accept step 1, which brings me to more that I want to talk about. My drinking, it mentions over and over again, it is the people that I harmed when I drank, or directly before, directly after. Step 4 tells us we went back through our lives. This is reverse chronology. If I waste a bunch of time looking for somebody I pushed in kindergarten, okay, I'm not going to make amends to the people I really hurt. And if that's the path that I'm choosing to cover, if I'm choosing to make amends to a coworker from 30 years ago to whom I was nasty at work, one of two things is happening. I'm striving for perfection, and that's left to God alone. God is the only perfect person, being, entity. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm depriving the people that I really did hurt out of their amends because I'm trying to take the easy way out. And that is the easy way out. I sat in a meeting with a brand new sponsee a few years ago on Long Island. She was a young girl and she had some cognitive problems where she had hard times processing things sometimes. And we heard someone literally do this whole routine about how he had stolen some money in college from his roommate before he was even drinking. And he was going to find this guy. And you know, he took three, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles is what it turned into. It turned into a movie, right? And, you know, doing the Tarzan, you know, swing over the moat, you know, with the alligators in the pit. And, you know, and go into the deepest, darkest jungles of Tanzania to find this guy, right? And she turned around and she looked at me and she was crying her eyes out and saying, I don't have the money. I don't have the mental capacity. I can never do this. And I said, let me explain. We're going to have a talk about what this is really like. So, you know, God will tell you. God will direct you. God will guide you how you have to make your amends. Remember one thing about step 8. It asks us to make a list of all the persons that we had harmed. regardless of the circumstances, meaning regardless of what we perceive they did to us or what they really did do to us, okay? That caused me to turn around and say, oh yeah, I'll show you. That's how you want it. That's how it'll be, okay? I'm going to disregard that for the time being, okay? And I'm not asking anybody to make an amends to someone who did something horrible to them, that they are still afraid to be in the same room with that person. That's between you and God, okay? So we find peace when we let go and we trust God. And pushing down the memories, pushing down the feelings, pushing it all down isn't going to do us any good. Because I will. So how about some of the ways I hurt people? Holding resentments, acting out, fear intimacy, that's a big one. Manipulating others, my need to be right, okay? Cheating, lying, obsessing, worrying, blaming others, emotionally abusing others. Those are just some of the highlights of how we can help, how we can hurt other people, okay? So what happens to me? I come in with this spiritual malady, and the further away I get from a drink without practicing a program, the crazier I get. And that was my story, okay? I was 2 years away from a drink, and I hadn't done this thoroughly, and I hadn't done it truthfully, and I hadn't done it honestly. That's a story for another day. That's my personal story. It's a kicker, but it's really, if somebody wants to ask me, if you had to put a story in the back of the big book, what would the title of it be? And it would be Dying Sober. So, and I don't want that to happen to anybody. So my thing is, don't wait a year, don't wait 2 years, get to the work. But this part of the program requires adult supervision, okay? You don't get sober and 2 days later go out and make your amends, because they won't be an amend. They'll be an apology. And you know what you can do with that? Like my father used to say, that and 50 cents is going to get you on the next green bus that comes along. So, okay. I come in and things get better in my life, a little bit better in my life, right? So maybe for some people, that really wasn't my story, because I caused more destruction in my first 2 years sober than I think I ever did drunk. But we get a home group, we get support. What got better for me was I had great commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say that, I was a GSR at 6 months sober. And I don't say that because I want some sort of credit or anything like that. I say that because I am purporting the absolute necessity of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I believe that that was the only thing that kept me from picking up a drink. Was it pride and ego? Yeah. Did I want to walk back in and say I've got one day sober? No, I did not. But it also kept me going because I knew I had obligations to people other than myself, and I had to think about people other than myself. I don't want to get off this couch tonight. I want to sit here and I want to watch Criminal Minds, but I've got no choice because I'm making the coffee. Okay? So, and they do get better, right? But then I noticed that areas of my life were getting much worse, much worse. I was doing things I shouldn't have done. I was behaving in ways I shouldn't have behaved. And the destruction was coming because the spiritual malady was growing within me. So what am I going to do? Okay. I have a choice. I think of my absolute worst amend ever. Okay, think about the one you were most afraid of. Think about the one that scared you the most. And then think about picking up a drink. And the choice seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? I'd rather go make an amend to this person than pick up a drink. And that is going to be the result. And if we don't realize that, well, just look at the story of one of our founders. Because this whole 8-step was built on his willingness. The whole fellowship was built on his willingness to do his 8-step. When he first looked at Bill and said, not going to do it. And what did Bill say, right? Well, let me know how that works out for you, Bob. And it didn't work out too good for him, did it? So if you want to start with the easier ones, start with the easier ones. But if you've had 20 years of drinking, and you have a list of amends that is four people or five people, and there's four or five people directly in your family that you live with, you've got a problem, okay? Because that list should be three or four times what it is. So what is the guiding force here? If I am willing to make amends to that person that I have harmed the most, I am doing exactly what the big book says. I am chasing my recovery with the desperation of a drowning man. And that person that I harm the most is in the shape of a life preserver. And that's the one that I'm most afraid to make the amends to. But if I can go ahead and I can make this amend to this person, and I'm terrified of making it, well, what does that mean? That means that I am not seeking, with the desperation of a drowning man, my recovery. So what is the catalyst for all of this? The catalyst for all of this is step one. We're right back to the beginning. If I cannot do a thorough and honest fourth and fifth step, if I cannot do a thorough and honest eighth and ninth step, I have not accepted powerlessness over alcohol, and I have not accepted that I need help from a power greater than myself. I have not accepted unmanageability, and I have not accepted that I will drink again if I'm an alcoholic. Now, if you're listening to someone in the rooms that are telling you that they did step one and step 12 and they were two-stepper, hey, that's great. But maybe you should keep your mind open to the fact that they're not really an alcoholic. Maybe they're just a hard drinker. So it says in our literature, in our book, that faith without works is dead. And I'm going to make an amends. And what is an amends? An amends is something good to show that I am sorry for what I have done, but I have no say in what that's going to be. That is where my willfulness, not willingness, but my willfulness would take over if I allowed it to. I'm going to make an amends to you, but I'm going to tell you how I'm going to do that. No, doesn't work that way. So as it goes down a little bit further in our book, besides reminding us that we would go to any length, it says that we looked over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them, unsure, on a spiritual basis. To some people, we probably should not emphasize a spiritual feature on our first approach. God, that power greater than ourselves, that we have to accept that I am powerless in step one. Because if I don't accept my powerlessness, then I'll never accept that I need a power greater than myself. So I have to believe that whatever my higher power is, I choose to call God, and that's why I'm referring to God. Whatever my higher power is, that higher power will give me the wisdom and the discernment to know whether I should share the spiritual aspects of my healing. So now it goes on. It tells me that I need to put my life in order. This is why I need to complete the ninth step. And it tells us that I am going to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Well, why am I doing this in the first place, if not for that reason? And it tells me not to lead with the chin. I am trying to right the wrongs I have done, but I don't want to invoke animosity to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the fact that I have to have faith in a higher power. And of course, the word demonstration, demonstration, demonstration. Action. And now it tells me at the bottom of that page that I will never get over drinking until I have done my utmost to straighten out the past. Done my utmost. It doesn't mean that it has to be accepted. So in step nine, I have the written moral inventory. I have acknowledged my defects of character. And it brings me to a place of honesty as I do my amends. And that is what I need in my message. I'm building this arch, right? Which I will walk through a free woman. But the foundation of that arch, the foundation stone of my recovery is step one. If I don't have step one, if I don't believe in step one, if I haven't accepted, is a big difference between accepting something and actually being willing to do the work on it. So if I have accepted step one and I'm willing to go ahead with the process, and then I'm willing to look to another source for power. And that would be a power greater than myself, in my case, God. So the work prepares me to be more honest as I begin to make my amends, right? And what are amends? My amends are my pure truth, without blame, distraction, and justification or manipulation. That was a big one for me, because that is why I could not make amends to my mother, because I didn't have forgiveness to my mother. If I'm going to make amends to you, you better believe I better have forgiven you for whatever I think I have to forgive you for. So I could not make amends to my mother without blame, without distraction, and without justification or manipulation, because I felt so much blame and so much justification in having this resentment that I could not find forgiveness in my heart. And I had been through 3, 4 steps, 5 steps, 6, 7, 8, and 9. But where was I? I was still in Dr. Bob mode. Not going to do it. I wouldn't even pray for the willingness to come. Okay. And then what happened? God dropped it in my lap. It was about 2 years ago, year and a half ago, when all this started. And my mother was being horribly, horribly taken advantage by a relative. This person had robbed her blind, was drugging her. And I still had that resentment. That resentment was in running in juxtaposition with our program was, you left my house after 20 years and went to live with this virtual stranger. This is what you get. And the other half of me said, this is not what we're supposed to be doing. And God did all of this. Myself and Deb were scheduled to go to Tennessee, very first time to Kingsport for the Eastern Tennessee Conference. And I was a little, sound like a great idea when we planned it. But then I found out that all the people I had gotten very close to with and very friendly with were all going to New Jersey. And I wanted to go to New Jersey. But I said, I can't do that. I promised Deb we're going to Kingsport. We're going to Kingsport. And that's where my answer came. I was the only one that could stop this. I was the one that had the paper trail. I was the one that had all the evidence. But it required consultations with other people, tradition four, before I moved ahead with the process. And I sat down and I consulted with one of the speakers, and he said to me, make a choice between your resentment and playing God. If it goes against your spiritual principles to stop an old woman from being abused. And it did go against my spiritual principles to let the abuse continue. I couldn't do it. So after consulting with him, and after consulting with others, and after 2 months of getting all my ducks in a row, I started the amends process. And the amends process was to start to rescue my mother from this situation. And once I did, a miracle happened. The resentment was gone. And I was finally able to go to my mother and say, this is what I did to you. Criticized your mothering. I held resentments against you. I did not understand you. A whole bunch of stuff. how can I make this right? And she said, just keep being my angel. And that was a true miracle for me. Now, I'm not saying that people that we make amends to and the resentment's gone. I'm not saying we don't get annoyed at them every now and then, but getting mildly annoyed at somebody is very different than holding a resentment towards them, right? I might get annoyed at you, right? Because you parked in my spot, okay? Or because you hit my garbage pails when you were doing it. But that's not a resentment makes, right? So I think I don't see my timer person. I'm thinking I'm probably about up. Am I up? 5 minutes. Okay, Sunny. So if we're thorough about this stage of our recovery, that sounds familiar, right? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we consider ourselves okay to make those amends. And we consider those people important enough to make the amends too, right? But I have to work on that forgiveness before I could work on the amends. And I don't know how that forgiveness is going to come, because God will show me that. But I do know that I have to let go of the past. I absolutely have to let go of the past, or that's never going to happen. You know, if I go to those bedevilments on page 52, I will see how, when I make my amends, every single one of, you know, sometimes I'll go to this page maybe twice a week, and I'll see how many of these are present in my life. What's my current agnosticism right now? And if it's more than two, I'm in deep trouble. So when I make my amends, I realize that I'm no longer having trouble with my personal relationships. I'm able to control my emotional nature, because I don't cry every time you look at me, and I don't avoid you, and I don't go, and I don't hate you. I don't sit here and hate you. I'm no longer a prey to misery and depression. I can make a living because I know how to live now. That's what make a living is. I no longer feel useful because I'm doing things for you. And I'm no longer full of fear. What makes me full of fear are unmade amends. And I'm no longer unhappy, and I can be of help, real help. I can be right there. And I'm not going to bore you with the instructions, because they're in the book. You don't need me to go over the instructions with you. You need your sponsor to go over the instructions with you. You need to do the instructions, and you need to make these amends, because you want to be free. You want to be free to go anywhere, to anything, in spite of that Eskimo on the Greenland ice cap. You can go to his house for Thanksgiving dinner and you're going to be okay, even if he shows up with a bot. And you will live happy, joyous, and free. And that's all I got, Sonny. Thank you.